John Daly here. You know what day it is?
Neither do I.
I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Morning.
Are you all right? I hope that you are. Sincerely hope that you are. Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Rocking and raring for the day ahead. Me, yeah, I'm all good. I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning, yeah, I'm all good.
Great. You are the glorious band, the chosen few. Know who you are. Know who you are. The best among us. Pretty much the best people on earth. Objectively. Tuning in to Breakfast with Bo, colloquially known as the Bo Show. What more can you ask? Pay your taxes, don't commit crimes, watch the Bo Show. A perfect existence. Okay, it has just ticked up to 8 in the AM British Summer Time. It's now Friday. That Friday feeling, thank F it's Friday. On the 17th of April in the year of our Lord, 2026. This week seems to have gone fantastically quickly for me. Seems like just a blink ago and I was talking about this Monday morning. All right, without any further ado, enough of that faff. What's the legacy corporate mainstream media banging on about this morning? What are they lying to you about by omission this morning? Because that's what they do, isn't it? That's their favourite tactic. It's their only real tactic anymore, isn't it? You know, don't talk about Ireland, guys. Hey, the cabal of Fleet Street editors in their WhatsApp, Facebook group, something. Hey, guys, don't talk about Ireland and all the petrol protests there, where normal people can't really function very much anymore, and the Irish government just sent in the riot police and the army. Don't talk about that. Yeah, don't talk about Epsom. Yeah, don't talk about Epsom, where some woman got gang raped outside a church, and everyone knows who did it. Everyone knows who did it, and the police refused to give any details of it. When the normal people of Epsom get all annoyed about it, we send in riot police. Don't talk about that, yeah? Whatever you do, don't mention that. It's a Mandy day today. We're going to talk all about Mandy today, but don't mention when he's on Rothschild's boat yet. Don't mention what his actual crimes were at all. Just say that he was just friends with Epstein. Don't mention, like, the treasonous and insider trader crimes he did. Don't mention that, yeah? What have we got here? Starmer in peril. Starmer's in peril. And Gunner's hero dead. Gunner's. The Gunner's hero is dead. That's a goalkeeper who used to play for Arsenal. The Gunners. The Gunners. He's died. His car got hit by a train. Anyway, we'll get into it. Starmer in peril. So as I mentioned, it's a Mandy day today. The pain is calling, oh Mandy. I've decided to go back to Mandy today, because it's been in the news a bit. It looks like pretty much a slam dunk case that Starmer seems to have lied. Seems to have been caught in lies. Like pretty much slam dunk, black and white case of it, more or less. First thing I'll say, there is a difference between like a good faith error and a full-blown lie, right? They're two very different things, aren't they? To say something that was factually wrong and incorrect, but you didn't know it was at the time, you genuinely believed you were saying the correct thing, and then knowing what you're saying, you know, fully, full-blown, knowing what you're saying is a lie, and you say it anyway. That said, Starmer in peril again as number 10 turns on the Foreign Office. So basically, what it is, it was shown, it seems, that Peter Mandelson, ex-Lord Mandelson, as was, didn't pass his vetting. If you want to work for the Foreign Office, right, one of the most prestigious, probably is the most prestigious government department, the Foreign Office. Right? Back in, it's not the case anymore, but back in the day, you'd almost certainly have to be quite posh, probably connected. Best if you got a first from Oxford or Cambridge. That's just to be a lowly, the first tier researcher, very, very low on the rung. Just that. Have to pass all sorts of vetting. It used to be the case that you had to have both your parents were British citizens and things. If he's going to be very, very senior, if he's going to be any sort of diplomat, an actual diplomat or an ambassador, you'd have to have an absolutely squeaky clean past and life, 100%. All of that's gone out the window now. When I was young, when I first left uni, I was interested in joining the Foreign Office. That would be a cool job, wouldn't it? When I'm young, when I'm like 22 or something, I don't know really what to do with my life. I haven't got a clear plan of exactly the goal I want to be. Like, it's been my childhood dream to be a fireman my whole life. Now I'm going to try and be a fireman. Wasn't that? I was like, what's cool? What could I do? What's prestigious? What's nice? Foreign Office, maybe? I didn't get in. I wasn't good enough. My second class degree wasn't good enough. And I was just working class lad. So they're like, no thanks. Anyway. All that's changed now. Also, where my father's an American, that was against me as well. Back then, they really wanted your parents, perhaps even your grandparents, to be British. Okay. Anyway. So Mandy, being the ambassador to the US, which, once again, other than perhaps the minister themselves, which was David Lammy in this case, other than the minister and the junior ministers, and possibly the permanent secretaries, the most prestigious thing you can do in the Foreign Office is the ambassador to the US. It's the most senior ambassadorial job, easily, by far. So to parachute someone else in, it should be given as a career-ending treat for someone that's been an ambassador for 30 years. They work their way up from, like, the ambassador of Montenegro, or the ambassador of Thailand, the ambassador of Italy. And finally, right at the end of their career, usually a knight, someone's already... You go, okay, you can be the ambassador for you. So to just parachute in Mandy, and they had to vet him. As I say, even the most lowly, like, T-boy in the Foreign Office should be utterly, utterly vetted. Make sure that no one's got any compromise on them, that they can't be bribed or blackmailed in any way, and that they're not a spy. Even like the T-boys, make sure you're not a spy. Okay, so... And if you're of any importance, there'll be deep, deep, deep vetting, going through line by line your life, really. One of the main things is making sure you can't be blackmailed by foreign agents or that you're just working for them. All right, so... The Foreign Office themselves and Keir Starmer had said in the past, yeah, he passed his vetting. He didn't. There's a few details about... whether people lied to Starmer and said he had passed his vetting, and then Starmer just took that and said, okay, fine, good, and then told Parliament and the rest of the world that, and it was wrong, so, i.e., a good faith error, or whether he knew that Mandy hadn't passed his vetting and said that he had, i.e., a full-blown liar. You know, and he said these things in Parliament and in interviews and at a lectern and all sorts of things. So that's a slam dunk that he said it. It's just whether it was in good or bad faith. Some are saying, the Foreign Office are saying, we were going through the vetting, then the government, Starmer, announced him as the ambassador. And at that point, it was a bit of a sticky wicket at that point. We could either, and then he failed the vetting, then Mandy fails the vetting. So at that point, the Foreign Office are like, well, we can either say he's failed the vetting and get everything undone, and it'd be a bit of an embarrassment for the government, or we'll just let him be the ambassador. And we're not sure of all the details of exactly what's going on here, because some of it doesn't really add up, but some of the reports are saying that it was that. that they hadn't finished the vetting. It was announced, and so they just let him be the ambassador. That's super shoddy if that is the case. That's a fail in government and in the Foreign Office itself, like the civil service. Okay. There's loads more questions, though, then now. If that was the case, if we're going to accept what Starmer said, he was just told that the security service had done the vetting and the Foreign Office were happy with it, and so it's all good, and he greenlit Mandy, and on we go. If that's even true, I suspect that's not true. Even if that is true, well then, who's pulling the strings at the Foreign Office? One of the very, very most senior civil servants there, what's his name, Ollie Robbins, has resigned overnight, or yesterday or overnight, he's resigned. He's been thrown under the bus. Basically, number 10 have said, it's the Foreign Office's fault, not our fault. So his head has got to roll professionally. So let's just say Starmer's story about it all is correct, is true. And why did the Foreign Office, why did someone like Ollie Robbins do that? Who's pulling his strings? Who said to him at that point, oh, the government has greenlit Mandelson and announced it, so you just let it go. You just force it through. Who's that? Or if it's not the case, it was just Starmer knew that he'd probably fail the vetting, and so you can just announce it, and it's a fait accompli. Who got him to do that? If he did know, you know, who's really pulling the shit? Who really, really got Mandy that job? Manipulated number 10 and the Foreign Office to get Mandy that job. Who really was it? Yeah. Don't talk about that though, guys. It's a Mandy day and we're putting Mandy on all the front pages, but don't talk about what really happened. Who knows? I don't know. Actually powerful people. Like the fifth Baron Rothschild, or I don't know, who knows? Ehud Barrett, Alan Greenspan, Larry Summers. I don't know. Who knows who? I don't know. Idea. Someone though, right? Someone beyond the Foreign Office and Keir Starmer themselves got Mandy that job. Don't talk about any of that. No. And even within the details today, don't mention like the worst bits of what Mandy actually did whilst he was in that post. And things he did previously, right, in the Gordon Brown years. Don't bring that up. But actually, start writing a puff piece again about Mandelson, how he's really not all that bad. Should we do that? Should we start lining that up? Have it in the tank, ready to try and rehabilitate his reputation? Yeah. All right, let's read the blurb on the front of the eye paper. Starmer in peril again as number 10 turns on the Foreign Office. Prime Minister is accused of misleading Parliament after revelation that Mandelson failed security vetting but was given job anyway. Do you remember, Jonathan Powell came out a few weeks ago when this Mandy stuff was sort of first around. Jonathan Powell, who's been around the scene forever, he was in with Tony Blair in 1997, as Mandy was, of course. Been around from the very beginning. Jonathan Powell. He was Blair's chief of staff, I think, at number 10 for a while, and had a whole number of different jobs in and around government whenever Labour has been in government. Total insider, Jonathan Powell. He said, because I think his current role is at the Foreign Office somewhere or other. And anyway, he had said on record that he had found it odd. I'm paraphrasing, but Jonathan Powell found it odd that Mandy had passed all his vetting unusually quickly. Like usually these things, like I say, they'll go through your life with a fine-tooth comb, your whole life. That takes a long while, weeks and weeks and weeks, maybe months. But Jonathan Powell had noticed that the process for Mandy seemed unusually quick. Yeah, because he didn't pass the security vetting. Imagine that. Imagine if you're part of that team somewhere or other. in the labyrinthine basements of Whitehall. You work for the security service. You work for MI5 or whatever, something like that. Your job is to vet Peter Mandelson. You start doing it and you realise, oh, God, no. Oh, wow. No, this guy is nowhere near up to snuff. You tell your political overlords and they're like, okay, thanks for the information. Pipe down. Next day, it's all over the news. Number 10, Mandy's got the job. And you're that security. Just imagine that. You'd be like, what's going on? What's the point then? All right, the blurb goes on. Downing Street insists Keir Starmer was kept in the dark until this week. I doubt it. I just doubt that. But that's their story. That's the story they're going with. And says, Foreign Office officials overhauled the security services. Sorry, overruled. Did you threaten to overrule him? The Foreign Office overruled security services. Was it? Even if it was, who told them to? Or just Ollie Robbins decided to go rogue, did he? A career civil servant. He just decided to go rogue on behalf of Peter Mountain for no reason. Did he? Okay. They overruled the security services, who warned that Lord Mandelson should not be allowed to become ambassador to Washington. Yeah, because he's dodgy as hell. Conservative leader Olukemi Badenoch calls on the Prime Minister to resign and alleges he misled Parliament. Well, he did, didn't he? Again, Olukemi, not wrong. Because he told the Commons three times that, quote, full due process, quote, was followed. It's just a case of whether that was good faith error or a full-blown lie. I would have thought it was a full-blown lie myself. I don't know, of course. But even if it's not, right, even if that's not a lie, it was just a good faith error. That still says incompetence, doesn't it? That still screams that you're a fool. That you're not running government properly. Some sort of crazy political nepotism took place. Either way, it's really bad for Starmer, isn't it? You're either a full-blown liar or you're a complete moron. It's got to be one of those two things. Got to be one of those two things. All right. Anxiety in number 10. Yeah, I bet. Where Starmer's team say he was not told Mandelson had failed vetting for the appointment until now. Yeah. He was sacked as Britain's ambassador last year over his ties to convicted paedophile and trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. Again, lies by omission. Was it? He was sacked because of that. Just because he knew Epstein and would email him a lot. It's just, that was it. That was a scandal. No. He passed him inside information about various things, didn't he? Market-sensitive information. Highly sensitive market-sensitive information. There's political insights that no one else could possibly have had. He passed that to Epstein, didn't he? He didn't just know him. Over his ties to Epstein. He just had ties to him, just knew him, he's just a mate. They just went on holiday together sometimes, that's all. Nothing more than that. No. Mandelson was effectively working as a fifth columnist, wasn't he? He was effectively working on behalf of an outside alien body within the government. That's what he was doing, wasn't he? Like a mole. A spy. Various ways you could characterise it, aren't there? A filthy traitor. His ties to Epstein. Yeah, all right. Just call it that. His ties to Epstein. Okay, that's the main story today. It's on all the front pages. So I thought I'd give it a fair few minutes there. Because it's on all the front pages. The Guardian. Ugh. Oh. It's the stain cam. Oh, there we go. We've got the stain cam finally. Ugh, The Guardian. Okay, revealed. Mandelson failed security vetting for US role. Okay, all right. What else? What other? Okay, Trump proclaims 10-day ceasefire in Lebanon. So, okay, Lebanon story. There's been some sort of, there has been talks between Hezbollah, or Lebanon, the Lebanese government. Already right there, it's murky and difficult, and like a low resolution view just won't do. The relationship between Hezbollah themselves, the paramilitary group, and the Lebanese government. Take you 40 minutes, honestly, to just untangle that. Well, you could do many, many long form videos, a few hours untangling that. Okay, haven't got time for that, have we? So, okay. Israel and Lebanon in talks over a 10-day ceasefire. Already been violated. Because Trump wants Netty to stop. Sort of needs him to stop for an off-ramp. There you go, on the Sky News. Israel accused of violating ceasefire deal with Lebanon. Already, just a few hours in. Picture of a giant explosion. You get it, State Department. I don't want to be accused of TDS. Or of dunking on America or the State Department or anything. I am half American myself, aren't I? A true Anglo-American myself. But do you get it that Netty's going to do what he wants to do? He'll drag you into a war, and then when you want it to end, he won't. All right, Trump proclaims a 10-day ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon, and then Israel's just not doing it. Okay. Trump claims credit for 10-day Lebanese ceasefire, as Pope says, world ravaged by a handful of tyrants. So does he? A little bit of an ongoing fallout between Trump and the Pope. Okay, the Pope's currently on some sort of tour of North Africa. And he said that the world is ravaged by a handful of tyrants. All right. Thanks for that. Great insight. Yeah. Trump hit back saying, look, Pope, dear the Pope, we can't let Iran get a nuclear weapon. Signed, Donald J. Trump. In a nutshell, there you go. All right. Megan, I was most trolled person in the entire world. Gutted. Well, gutted then. Don't be obnoxious then. Yeah, social media's tough. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you're a really obnoxious moron, you probably get trolled loads, yeah. Maybe social media's not for you, Megan. Maybe life in the public eye isn't for you. You don't seem to be able to handle it, like, at all. You seem utterly out of your depth, Megan. PM misled MPs over Mandelson's security vetting. All right, we've done that. He does seem to have done. Whether he will be forced to resign, because everyone said you've got to resign now, bro. Everyone. Olukemi Badenoch, that Nigerian woman, LARPing as the leader of the opposition. Ed Davey, that absolute cretin. Nigel Al-Farage. All of them. They all said, you've got a resign, bro. You've definitely sort of lied. You kind of definitely lied to Parliament a couple of times here. You can't say. I suspect he'll cling on by his fingernails until the May local elections. What is it, May the 7th, are they? I suspect that because it will be the Labour Party themselves that will have to do a vote of no confidence and do some sort of internal party coup on him. And nobody wants that job before the local elections, because Labour are going to get trounced in that. Reform are going to do very, very well in that. 100%. Loads and loads of councils are going to flip straight from Labour to Reform. The last polling I saw yesterday, or maybe 2 days ago, it was that Labour just lose massively. The Tories lose more. Not as massively, nowhere near as massively, but they lose more as well. The Lib Dems pick up a bit and Reform get a stonking win up and down the country, right? So that's going to happen. Because that is going to happen. It's written. There's sort of no way to avoid it at this point. So if you're one of the Labour big beasts, you're David Lammy, you're Shabana Mahmood or Yvette Cooper, one of these people, Wes Streeting, perhaps. You don't want to become the Prime Minister just before that happens. That would be horrible. That'd be terrible. You're only going to be Prime Minister for a couple of years anyway, aren't you? Because Labour will lose at the next general election, almost certainly. So, but you don't want your couple of years as Prime Minister to begin on the worst possible footing imaginable. Just a crisis, a full-blown crisis within your first week or two. You don't want that. So where it's up to the Labour Party to coup Starmer out of power, they're not going to do it. They won't do it, no matter what happens, really, even if he's been shown to lie to Parliament. I might be wrong about that. My take here might prove to be wrong because it's so disastrous for Starmer, this, that there's no option. I don't think so. I think all the Labour grandees will just let it slide, just let it happen until May, after May the 7th. Then he's gone. I don't see how Starmer could hang on after those May elections. I'd be very surprised. All right, let's have a look at the Financial Times. The FT, Israel-Lebanon truce agreed, Trump says. It's not really a truce, is it? Israel's still doing what they please. Starmer accused after revelation that Mandelson failed vetting for US Post. Opponents say Parliament misled. Number 10 denies ministers knew. Questions over security process. All right. We've done that. It's on the front pages of all of them. I'll whip through them now, and we'll get to the websites where there's other things. The Daily Telegraph, Starmer and Mandelson. All right, was there a... Oh, look at this fantastic insight from someone called Tom Harris. Probably got a PPE from Oxford or something. The Prime Minister's position is scarcely credible. He cannot survive. Thanks, mate. Thanks, Tom. Cheers for that. Here's a great piece of journalism, an amazing piece of journalism. It must be brought to you. It's very, very important. A columnist here, whose name is Andy Mycock. Andy Mycock writes an opinion piece saying, "Think my name's bad. My poor mother is called Pat." Well done, The Telegraph. That's a great bit of journalism. Front page. Put that on the front page. Print the Times. The Venerable Times. There's the Pope there, releasing a dove of peace. I mean, far be it from me to call one side or another in the spat between the Pontifex Maximus, Christ's vicar on earth, and Donald J. Trump, but If you believe Iran is working towards getting a nuclear weapon, then why would you sort of defend them in any possible way? I don't know. Like just the kumbaya, happy clappy, let's all just get along. Why can't we all just get along? Mandelson hired after failing to pass vetting. All right. The Mail, complete and utter globalist slop, trying to pretend it isn't. Starmer on brink as his Mandelson lies are exposed. All right, we get it. Yeah, there's that goalkeeper. What was his name? Manninger? Alex Manninger? He's retired now. He's a goalkeeper. Look, there he is in a Gooners shirt. Harry's wearing a Gooners shirt.
I still can't believe that that's, like, a real thing.
Guna. He's retired now. He's, like, 48, I think. He used to be a goalkeeper for Arsenal. And, yeah, he was driving a car and across a level crossing, across a train track, got hit by the train, dead. Alex Manninger. Sad, really. Be careful, though. Don't just drive across a train track without looking or whatever, though, you know. Life lesson. You know. Word to the wise. Look both ways when you're about to drive across a train track. All right. The Daily Express. Oh, it's a good paper. PM under fire. All right, we get it. Starmer's, he told blatant lies, not just lies, they're blatant lies. There you go. Was that Nigel who said that? Anyway, they're all saying the same thing, more or less. The Daily Star, something about Victoria Beckham, don't care. Gooner's hero dead. Oh, look, there's a picture of the thing. Grizzly. He was a good keeper. Well, you don't get to play for Arsenal unless you're a good keeper. But yeah. Okay. That happened. Posh Spice. We've always tried to be honest parents. We've always tried to be the best parents that we could be. Did you? Yeah, don't care. Fine, don't care. Exclusive Kremlin threat. Putin's Brit hit list revealed. Russians name four locations as possible targets for sabotage over Ukraine links. That's, in my opinion, just a complete scaremongering story. It may well be true that the Russians draw up plans like that. It probably is true. I don't know, it's just pure scaremongering. Oh, we've got to go to war with Russia. We've got to be prepared to go to war with Russia. Meanwhile, cut $3.5 billion out of the defence spending and we won't give you more money. Covered all that yesterday, didn't we? The Sun, they found Fergie. Sarah Ferguson. This gold digger. This weirdo freak gold digger. That's all she was, remember? That's all she was, right? There's a thing called the Sloan Rangers. So talk a little bit about Fergie for a minute. It's Friday. Only younger people, like Harry, someone like Harry, not blaming him, wouldn't know any of this stuff. If you're foreign, you probably wouldn't know any of this stuff. There's a very exclusive part of London, Sloan Square. Yeah, some of the big hotels right near there. Or is it? Is not a million miles from like Grosvenor Square. Massive mansions. Very exclusive, rich part of London, Sloan Square. There used to be, or I think there still is, but there certainly used to be a sort of set of people, you know, like you have the Bloomsbury set. Bloomsbury is another part of London. People that hang around that certain place in London. Places like Hoxton are very trendy, fashionable right now. Anyway, back in the 80s, there'd be a set of women, young, attractive, rich women, that want to try and bag a prince or a duke. Right? And princes and dukes around where the Duke of Westminster has got loads and loads of property. All around that part of London, Sloane Square. Okay. So you're just a rich, young, relatively attractive. I mean, you can make your own mind up about if the young Sarah Ferguson was attractive or not. They would hang around there, like Princess Diana. They would go to the same bars and clubs and hotels and try and bag a prince or a duke or an earl or an heir to a duke, an earl... The heir of an earldom or something. Some very, very rich person. The Sloane Rangers, this set of women. The Sloane Rangers, right? The leading lights of which were Sarah Ferguson and Diana Spencer. Well, they won. Ultimately, they won. Diana married... Well, first of all, Sarah Ferguson bags Andrew, the young, eligible bachelor Prince Andrew. And she lured him and got him, was able to marry him. There you go. And then her Bezzy mate, Lady Diana, introduces her to her new fella's older brother, the Prince of Wales, Sausage Fingers himself. They get married, the rest is history, you get it. Okay, so first and foremost, Sarah Ferguson is just a gold digger. That's all she is. Sloane Ranger. Then goes on over the coming decades to reveal herself to be a weirdo freak who tried to get as close to Epstein as possible. One of his biggest fans. So she's a weirdo. She's an absolute disgusting person. There you go. And ever since the latest revelations of Andy and Mandy, and all the emails where she's almost trying to pimp her own daughters out to him, or something like that, something adjacent to that, loads and loads and loads of examples of her kissing Epstein's ass in 100 different ways. You're like the brother I never had, things like that. Like, thank you for introducing me to XYZ at some party, whatever. Oh, no, 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 no. Hope you've had a great birthday. Love you lots. Ever since all of that, she's just been in hiding. She hasn't really been seen. Well, now she has. For 213 days, she's been in hiding. Quote, unquote, hiding. She's just basically in the Alps, the Austrian Alps. Just staying at some hotel, whatever, in the Austrian Alps. Just trying to keep a low profile. Long time no see, Fergie, say the Sun. And look, you can only imagine some very, very long lens photo. Very, very, you know, they got a picture of her from a long way away. Look, telephoto lens. Front page. Make that the front page. Print. At the Metro, something about J-Lo, don't care about J-Lo. Something about Posh, don't care. Could not care less. All right, that's the front pages. Should we do our poll? This is about the time of the show we do our poll, don't we? There we go. Okay, Harry's brought it up. We asked you guys, should Starmer resign over the Mandelson affair? A bit of a teed you up there for you to knock it out of the park. Yeah, stonking win for the yes. The ayes have it. 88% of you say yes. Only 6% of you say no, and 5% of you say maybe. Who's that 6%? You're in the wrong chat. I'm joking. Don't go. I didn't mean it. I'm joking. Come on, I'm joking. I still love you. We can make this work. Who loves you, baby? It just ticked up. 89%. 89% of you are saying yes. It's pretty disgraceful, isn't it? As I said earlier, it's either he's lying, or he's a complete moron. Okay, all right, that's the poll. Should we have a look at the websites? What have we got on the websites today? Seeing as I've got the tab there, should we have a quick look at the price of oil, the price of crude? West Texas, $93 a barrel. Brent, $98. They've stopped screeching about all-time highs. All right. Here's one story I thought was interesting. Oh, there's something I want to ask you, Harry. See this story a bit in the websites about some TikTok singer called David, or D4VD, David.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm not on TikTok, and I don't like black rap, American rap music. I've got no idea who that is. I've never heard of him until this morning. Is he actually famous and well-known, or...?
Yeah.
He's actually a big...
Yeah, I mean, he's been on the radio. He's done music for some, like, lots of different series and stuff.
Oh, okay.
It's like mid, you know? It's not great. It's not bad, but it's not great.
Oh, what, the music? The quality of the music?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm sure it's complete laughable nonsense. No, I was just asking whether he is actually quite a famous person or not, because I've got no frame of reference.
Well, yeah, because when they...
He is, you're saying.
Yeah, the way that... Because this is about... the murder. Yeah, he was on tour when they looked in his Tesla, I'm pretty sure. So he was like proper, goes on tours and stuff.
Yeah. So I just wanted to make sure he's not some, like, he's actually quite obscure. But you're saying he is actually quite famous. Yeah, he seems to have murdered a young girl. Again, I'd never heard of this gentleman until this morning. And as you said, his name's real name's David Burke. And this young lady was just found dead in his car. Somehow he's let out on bail or something. The way when you read it, it's like it was last year, last September or October or something. And I think he's out on bail because it wasn't 100% clear whether he'd murdered her or not. I mean, it's pretty clear. But now he has, in fact, been arrested and charged with just full murder. There you go. A little bit of slop, but it is in the news. This story I thought was interesting, much more interesting. Headline says, finance ministers from around the world, finance ministers and top bankers raise serious concerns about Mythos AI model. I've voiced my concerns, haven't I? I think a number of times on this show and on the State of Politics, and on the main podcast and just on Twitter. I'm not a fan of AI. I have said, haven't I, that we don't even know what problems and concerns might arise from it. Well, now the world's finance ministers and top bankers are saying exactly that. How did you not see that come? Of course. The unknown unknowns. Remember when Rumsfeld said that? He wasn't the first one to say it, was it? But there's like the known knowns. What we know. The known unknowns. What we know, we don't know yet. Certain things that we should know, but don't. And then the unknown unknowns, things we haven't even thought of. And of course, we don't know what they are. Now they're talking about the unknown unknowns of AI. Yeah. Let me just quickly read a tiny bit from this. Faisal Islam, complete disgusting shill, writes, finance ministers, central bankers and financiers have expressed serious concerns about a powerful new artificial intelligence model that could undermine the security of financial systems. The development of Claude Mythos, the Claude Mythos model by Anthropic, has led to crisis meetings after it found vulnerabilities in every major operating system and browser. Oh. Could have predicted such a thing might be possible, might happen. Experts have warned that the model potentially has an unprecedented ability to identify and exploit cybersecurity weaknesses. Canadian Finance Minister François-Philippe Champagne told the BBC that Mythos has been discussed extensively by his peers at the key International Monetary Fund meeting in Washington, D.C. this week. He said, certainly it is serious enough to warrant the attention of all the finance ministers. The difference is that the Strait of Hormuz, we know where it is, and we know how large it is. The issue that we're facing with Anthropic is that it's the unknown unknown. Yeah, well done. Yeah. I mean, obviously you don't know what AI is going to do and be capable of. And it's still in its very, 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 very early stages, isn't it? AI, super early. It's still in its complete infancy, right? If we've got centuries or millennia to go with human civilization, it's still in the first few seconds of its existence, isn't it? Right? So, and it's already like a real, real concern for everything. Well, every operating system and browser and stuff. Every bank. When I first started talking about my concerns about it, that if it's up to me, I'd John Connor the whole thing. I'd go to war with it and end it all if it was up to me. A lot of people on Twitter are like, yeah, no, I agree with you, yeah, yeah. A lot of people going, no, stop being a Luddite. People on Twitter didn't say that exact word, but, you know, stop being a Luddite. Just get with it. It's inevitable. Just stop being a boomer. It's not the 20th century. You know, stop being a scaremonger. Seems to me pretty obvious. The unknown unknowns of AI. All right, should we move on? Was there something on the ITV news? Hegseth warns Iranian regime to choose wisely or face continued blockade. I think we're past the point where Iran are just going to do what America says and wants, aren't we? I feel like they're going to do what they think is in their best interest, even if that means they end up ruling over a country that's just rubble. Trump tells the new pope that Leo must understand Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. Like, Trump's like, why are you counter-signaling me, dude? Like, butt out. What Trump's saying? All right. If you're both super MAGA dude and a Catholic, what do you think? You're a super MAGA, super pro-Trump American and a full-blown Catholic. Whose side do you take between the Donald and the Pontiff? Let us know. Let us know your thoughts on a postcard. Send it to our PO Box address. Don't. All right. There we go. Israel accused of violating ceasefire. It just immediately. There was no ceasefire. Really. Cuba blackout. Yeah. Cuba is completely imploding. I mean, the US is blockading it, but their power grid is just done. So Havana at night is just black, just blackout. There's some lights, but that's due to energy stored up in solar panels during the day or batteries. The actual power grid is done. Barely get enough food, really can't get enough food. Not enough petrol for even state-run vehicles, you know, like police cars or ambulances. Not enough for that, let alone normal people. Yeah, Cuba is in trouble. Oh, this one here, look, look, this headline. Powerless Cuba is, quote, most certainly next, quote, on Trump's list. Well, it would be nice, I think. It would be nice, wouldn't it, if the average, normal, completely innocent person of Cuba is finally liberated from the insane communist regime that has ruled them ever since the Bay of Pigs. Not the Bay of Pigs, sorry, Fidel got in before that, didn't he? Ever since the 1950s. It's been tough for Cuba. I mean, even long before, you got Batista before Fidel Castro. Wasn't a great ruler. Didn't seem to look after the people of Cuba very well. Going back to the early 20th century, going back to like, what, the 30s, the 1930s. The completely average, ordinary, peaceful, innocent member of society in Cuba has had a very tough time of it for a few generations now. Might be nice if Hexith and Rubio and the Donald open that country up so it's not a complete hellhole anymore. Just my opinion. All right, the Daily Mail. I'll see they lead with Mandelson. There's a... Posh, don't care about Posh. Oh, here's a story. Sharon Osbourne confirms plans to attend far-right activist Tommy Robinson. He's not far-right, he's a Sifna. He's not far-right. It's not far right, it's complete milk toast. But Sharon Osbourne's going to go to his Unite the Kingdom march. Yeah, sounds about right. Sounds like Tommy's speed. Yep. Get her up there and so she can say, yeah, migration is really bad, but, you know, if they drink tea and like cricket and pretend for a moment that they've got the interests of this country at heart, then they are British. That sort of thing. Yeah. Sharon Osbourne, Tommy Robinson. Makes sense. Nonsense. Utter nonsense. All right. The Express. What have we got in the Express? Oh, look. BBC ripped apart by Green Party for exposing migrants lying for asylum. Do you remember yesterday? We talked all about it yesterday, didn't we? How the BBC did a bit. Or a multi-part bit of investigative journalism. All about how thousands and thousands and thousands of migrants use a giant industry that exists to game our asylum system. Just liars upon liars to get gibs and the right to remain. Whether you say you're gay, you say you're an atheist, you say you're a victim of abuse, whatever. And then there's a whole industry of lawyers that aren't even really lawyers a lot of the time. Will then put pressure on the Home Office to so they give you the permanent right to remain. And then you can bring your family over, chain migration, whatever. BBC did actually a good job, funnily enough, crazily enough, actually did a good job on that. Green Party didn't like it. The Green Party weren't amused by that. So if you're out there and you think you're voting Green, anyone watching this still thinking you want to vote Green because you think it's about environmentalism. Okay, pay attention to this. You think it's just about putting your rubbish in the right bin for recycling. It's just about greenhouse gases, right? It's just about CO2 in the atmosphere. It's just about keeping the green belt nice and clean. No, the Green Party is an odd nexus between Islamists and communists, and they mean to destroy our country, replace us in our own our one and only ancestral homeland. Zach Polanski, real name Dave Paulden, is a psycho who wants to speed run us off a cliff and destroy our civil society. Destroy us all, ultimately. Why am I saying that? Well, off the back of the BBC doing that doing that reporting about how people are thousands and thousands and thousands of people a year are lying to us in order to stay in this country when they don't deserve to be. What did the Green Party have to say about that? They said that the Green Party has publicly has accused the publicly funded broadcaster, the BBC, of trying to, quote, heighten the hostile environment facing those claiming asylum. You get it? The Green Party is on the side of invaders. The Green Party is on the side of foreign fifth columnist invaders. And the rate of violent crime and sex crime among those per capita is gigantic. And the Greens are on their side. Even the BBC just highlighting, just mentioning, oh, this is happening. That's too much for the Greens. That's bad as far as the Greens are concerned. Do you get it? Do you get it that it's not about environmentalism? It's not about the ozone layer. Right? It's about speedrunning this country into oblivion. A Greens spokesman said, "We are disappointed the BBC failed to put this report in context." It did. What context are you talking about? It did. They're disappointed with that the BBC noticed and wrote about it. The BBC failed to put this report in context, showing the challenges those genuinely claiming asylum face. Or won't anyone think of the genuine asylum seekers in the face of reports of showing that there's a massive, massive problem with fake ones? What? What? That's weak. So weak. I went on to say, when the BBC, this is the Green speaking about the BBC, when they give so much prominence to the report, stretching it out over multiple days of reporting, they can do what they want. Who are you to tell them how many days the BBC can run with a certain story? It ceases to be in the public interest. Are you kidding me? It ceases to be in the public interest if you report on it for more than one day in a row. These mental, mental traitors. And instead it serves to heighten the hostile environment facing those claiming asylum. Don't be hostile towards your invaders. Don't notice them. And if you do happen to, certainly don't then be hostile in any way. Don't talk about it. Don't mention it. Don't write about it. Just be invaded and accept it. Just be replaced in your own ancestral homeland and become a hated minority in your own ancestral homeland forever. Don't you dare notice it, let alone say anything. It's not in the public interest. Green voters out there, do you get it? Is it starting to get through at all? You're going to sort of nod along with what I'm saying, but then still just vote Green. Don't do it. They're psychos. They're psychos. They will ruin this country. The Green spokesman, added that the BBC report gives an entirely false impression of asylum system, which in reality is stacked against people seeking asylum. There you go. Just a complete disgusting lie. Is it stacked against them, is it? Not only was the BBC wrong-headed to notice any problem and write about it, but on top of everything else, we need to go further. We need to make our asylum system even more lenient, according to the Greens. We need more safe and legal routes. We need the borders even more open than they already are, according to the Greens. Do you get it? All right, let's move on. Sun. Migrant city. Here's a story. Inside sprawling illegal camp overrun by migrants as greedy travellers cash in on UK's immigration crisis. This is in South Ockenden in Essex, a place I know. South Ockenden, not a million miles from where I was born and raised and grew up most of my life. South Ockenden. Used to be just a field, just a green field there, not very long ago, where just horses grazed. Now, travellers just used it illegally, like against the council planning permission, just started using it to live on, just travellers. And now they've realised, oh, there's so many illegal foreign migrants, invaders, that we could sell this little, a bit of our caravans, our crappy old caravans, We could let them live in it and they'll pay us their money to do that. Everyone's a winner. The travellers are a winner because they get a bit of money out of it. And the migrants are winning because they don't have to live in a tent or just be homeless or whatever. Apart from the normal people of South Ockenden and the country, we lose. And as you can imagine, it's just got bigger and bigger and bigger. It used to be much, this site used to be a lot, lot smaller than this originally when the travellers first turned up. Now, look, now it's just a sprawling, like a migrant city. It's not quite a city, is it? But, you know. It's now just growing and growing and growing and growing and growing. There you go. Oh, you live in South Ockenden. Get over it. Don't be a bigot. Don't notice bigot. You're going to be a racist about it and say something disparaging about this. You better not. You better not, bigot. Ooh. You'd be a Nazi if you were to notice that this is real and that you might not like it. Just have open borders. Just have a multinational, multiculti, multiracial Britain. Just accept it. Just accept invaders where you live in crazy numbers. If you don't, you're a fascist. Got any sort of problem with this just turning up where you live? You're a fascist. Lisa Nandy or something will call you a fascist. Yasmin Ali Baba Brown, Christian Guru Murphy. They'll just call you a racist. We've got to get over that, haven't we? We should. I have. A lot of people have. Rupert Lowe has. Someone accuses you of being a racist. Just go, so what? So I don't care. Yeah, perhaps in your paradigm I am. So what? What now? Now let's keep talking about what's going on. All right. Well, it's getting towards nine. Should we move on to this day in history? What happened on this day in history down through the centuries of note? Should we talk about that? You guys like that segment? I like doing it. On the 17th of April then, what happened? In the year 1492, Christopher Columbus signs a contract with Spanish monarchs, Ferdinand and Isabella of Spain, to find the Indies. So 1492, this is like before he left. Find the Indies, the East Indies, the Spice Islands, because people had gone all the way eastwards, all the way out to what is modern-day Southeast Asia, like Indonesia, the Philippines. They called them the Indies, the Spice Islands. Christopher Columbus was convinced the Earth was in fact a globe and that you could get to the Indies by just sailing straight across the Atlantic by going west. And he did. And he thought for the rest of his life he'd found the Indies. You know, he didn't rock up on the United States. He rocked up in the Caribbean, first and foremost. He thought they were the Indies. I think he went to his grave thinking he'd found the Indies. Anyway, okay. So on this day, he signed the original contract with Ferdinand and Isabella. Okay, on this day in 1895, the Treaty of Shimonoseki is signed, ending the First Sino-Japanese War. That's where the Japanese, the Imperial Japanese, and the Chinese went to war with each other over Korea, basically over Korea. Korea was basically part of a vassal, a bit more than a vassal, of the Chinese at that point. And the Japanese wanted it. Considered, when you look at a map, how close Japan and Korea are, really. There was a big battle at Pyongyang and stuff. A complete Japanese victory. The Japanese, because by the end of the 19th century, the Japanese were sort of a formidable military power already by that point. They'd spent a couple of generations, 50 years more, modernizing their navy and army. And so were able to beat the Chinese easily in Korea. The First Sino-Japanese War. Okay, and on this day, the peace treaty was signed. On this day in 1917, Lenin issues his radical April thesis, calling for the Soviets to take power during the Russian Revolution. Yeah, got all sorts. I've got a fair bit of content all about Lenin Oh, no, it's on History Bro, actually. On History Bro, I've got a multiple part series. I've also talked about Lenin on Epochs as well with Apostolic Majesty. So a couple of different places you can find me talking for a long time all about the life and career of Lenin. Particularly on the History Bro one, though. I've got multiple part series all about Stalin, all about the young Stalin. I decided I wanted to just talk about Stalin from his childhood to about 1917. Because lots and lots and lots of people know all about the later life and career of Stalin when he was the master of Soviet Russia. A lot of people don't know about his early life and how he got to that position exactly. So I've done that in fantastic detail. And of course, in that, I talk all about Lenin loads. Because of course, their stories overlap massively. Anyway, the April thesis. So the February Revolution, there were two revolutions in Russia in 1917, the February and the October Revolution. The first one, the February Revolution, gets rid of the Tsar and brings in a provisional government. And it's not till the October Revolution when Lenin and the Bolsheviks do another revolution and they become the full power in Russia. Anyway, in that period, because what we're in April. So after the February Revolution, Lenin, in his April thesis, talks about how, what does he talk all about? He talks all about how this provisional government is nonsense. We, the Bolsheviks, should not work with any other, we shouldn't work with the Mensheviks, we shouldn't work with liberals or anything. We shouldn't, the whole government is nonsense. Kerensky's government is a whole nonsense. And the Soviets, i.e., how to describe what a Soviet is really, a workers, it's much, much more than a union, but like a workers collective. The workers take control of the means of production and that the very Soviets should control government. And of course, the Bolsheviks at the top of it and Lenin at the top of that really control it. Yeah, so in the April thesis, he's saying, look, we've got to get serious about our revolution. Okay, the Tsar's gone, great. But we exclusively need to be in power. There needs to be another revolution now, us. The Soviets. Right, there you go. Fascinating period between February and October 1917 in Russia, in Petrograd. St. Petersburg. Okay, on this day in 1961, 1,400 Cuban exiles land in the Bay of Pigs in a doomed attempt to overthrow Fidel Castro. Yeah, leading ultimately to, it's not long after that, is it, the missile crisis. A lot of people, like Curtis LeMay on down, Alan Dulles, etc., etc., extremely annoyed at Jackie Boy, John F. Kennedy, for failing to back up those Cuban exiles attempting to overthrow Fidel Castro. They wanted him, after they were defeated at the Bay of Pigs, easily, by the way, they wanted him, the deep state, wanted John Kennedy, send in the Marines or at least use the US Air Force to bomb Castro at that point. And JFK said no. Did that lead ultimately to him getting the back of his head blown off? It was the back of his head, yeah. All the doctors at Parkland said there was a baseball-sized hole in the back of his head, an exit wound in the back of his head. Did it lead to that? Was that like the final straw for people like Richard Helms and Alan Dulles? What are those autopsy pictures where it shows an intact back of JFK's head? What's that about? How can that be? And yet all the doctors at Parkland on that day said there was a baseball-sized hole in the back of his head. How does that make sense? Don't know. Okay, on this day, 1982, Canadian Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, Justin Trudeau's dad, if you believe his dad isn't Fidel Castro, Pierre Trudeau and Queen Elizabeth, the old queen, signed the Proclamation of the Constitution Act, establishing the Charter of Rights and Freedoms as part of the country's new constitution, Canada's new constitution. A little bit dry and boring. They're still in the Commonwealth. They just want to be a bit more. There's lots to it and it's not that interesting. All right. St. Cuthbert's Gospel. On this day in 2012, the 8th century, I think it's 7th century. They got that wrong there. The 8th century St. Cuthbert's Gospel. Oh, the Gospel is from later. St. Cuthbert himself was from the 7th century. Basically a monk of, a bit more than the monk of Lindisfarne. Buried in Lindisfarne. The 8th century St. Cuthbert's Gospel, Europe's oldest intact book, is purchased by the British Library in London for £9 million. It's quite small. It's only like A5 or smaller. It's the Gospel of John. It's not like one of those apocrypha. It's not like a whole new gospel, life of Jesus or something. It's just the Gospel of John in Latin, dating from the 7th, 8th, maybe possibly the 8th century. I mean, what incredible condition it's in there. Look at that. What incredible condition that's in. Isn't it? Remarkable, really. Absolutely remarkable. Okay, £9 million. Boom. All right. That's what happened on this day in history of note, according to that website. Let's have a look at our Rumble Rants and Super Chats. Let me just do that with the old mic so I can see. So I can see what's going on. All right, what have we got here? We've got Global Church History. And still at number one, Global Church History. Today in the year 47 BC, the Longji earthquake, a magnitude of 6.8 and intensity of 9, in central China, leaves countless dead. If you ever go on Wikipedia and look at like the list of earthquakes and floods that have affected China down through the centuries and millennia, it's a bit, maybe it's not surprising if you know, but if you don't know, it's a little bit surprising how many there have been and the death tolls of them. Like the whole Yangtze Basin getting flooded out or something, nearly. Or just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people killed over and over and over and over again in China through the centuries. Okay. Global Church History also says, in 1397, Geoffrey Chaucer narrates the Canterbury Tales for the first time before Richard II. Interesting. Didn't know that exactly. But that's interesting. Canterbury Tales, kind of funny. You have to get your ear in. You have to get used to it. It's not immediately accessible, to be perfectly honest. But once you do, they're quite funny. Quite interesting. Okay, for Tea and Barber says, morning. Hope you have a great weekend ahead. Thank you. You too. Yeah, you too. Have you seen? Have you heard? Have you seen this? Have you heard about this? Restore at 9%. We're going to win. We're inevitable. Yes. Aim high, vote low. Millions must go from Zoomers to Boomers. There was a poll a few days ago or a week ago saying it was at 4%. All the reform tards went crazy with that one. Loved it. Oh, no. That was a blip. It's actually 9%. We're coming for you. In that same poll, reform down to like 21% or something. So even if there was a general election right now, Nigel couldn't form a government. He'd have to go into coalition with the Tories or something right now. Not many people want Nigel, who said if we capitulate, if we alienate Islam, we lose. We lose. That's not good enough. That's slave talk. That's capitulation. That's cowardice. Moral and political cowardice. That's not good enough. Have a backbone. We need someone with a backbone. And it's not Nigel, is it? All right. Fallen Firebird says, This Pope venerated the graves of Algerian terrorists who murdered French civilians. I didn't know that. That's new to me. Okay, sounds okay. As always, dig down to the root and you'll always uncover anti-white hatred. This isn't the Church of Innocent III. Right. Well, if you did that, and I've got no reason to disbelieve you, that's disgusting, isn't it? That's absolutely disgusting. Why can't we all just live together? Why can't we all just kumbaya, just all work together, bro? Meanwhile, you are still picking a side. All right. And then Global Church History said, for the last Rumble Rant today, he said, they knew the earth was round, but believed the nearest land was too far to be safe. Columbus knew from the stars that he was not in India. Quote, India. Oh, India was a broad term. Africa was the Middle Indies, for example. Okay, so I've gone into all this stuff in kind of fantastic detail on Epochs when I talked about Magellan, the life of Ferdinand Magellan. All about what people did and didn't know, did or didn't think about the Copernican model and the Indies and the use of the word Indies and India. So thanks, Global Church History. I do know all of that stuff. I've gone into it in fantastic detail before. But there you go. Yeah, most people long before the 15th century knew the world must be a sphere. Going back to ancient Egypt, like going back to what, the 2nd century, 2nd or 3rd century, people were shown, what was it? Was it Aristarchus? I don't know. There's a story Carl Sagan tells on Cosmos where using a well on midday on summer solstice and the sun shines directly, perfectly down a well. And you realise that at the same time, exact same time, exact same point in the year, if you're much on the equator, that is, a well on the equator at the stroke of midday on summer solstice. But on the stroke of midday on summer solstice in a more northerly latitude, Alexandria or something, that isn't the case. You must be standing on a curved surface. They figured that out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, 1,000 years before Copernicus and Columbus and stuff. Modern day flat earthers are retards. Okay, let's do the YouTube super chat, shall we? If you would, Harry, engage. Right. A fair few. Let's whip through them. O Herman the Tosser, or Zero Herman the Tosser, says, Salagadula Menkichabula Bibbity Bobbity Bo. Okay, thank you very much for that. Appreciate that. LJMV says, Bo, you magnificent man. Pretty magnificent. No. Thank you. It's always flattering. You say, Bo, you magnificent man. Did I beat church history? No, afraid not. You've got to get up early in the morning to beat global church history. Oh, yeah. He's not mucking about. Global church history is playing for keeps here. Okay. Dr. Molotov. Oh, actually, Global Church History has switched over to Rumble Rants and you're on YouTube, so you might have done. Okay. Dr. Molotov says, you look really cute today. Here's some money. Oh, cheers. This is an old shirt from when I used to work in the City of London. They'd wear shirts like this. You see an older guy in his 50s or 60s wearing a shirt like this and red braces. When I was like much younger, I'd be like, that's cool, that's a good look. I never wear braces, don't wear braces. Cheers though, thank you. Yeah, I'm on the main podcast today as well, the main Lotus Eaters podcast, so you get a chance to see me and this ensemble again. Okay, thank you for the money. LJMV says, Trump should cut aid to Israel if they attack, but Bibi will probably release the Epstein files if he cuts. Strange Melania came out against Epstein. Yeah, who knows what's going on there? Who knows what sort of compromat Epstein gave Ehud Barak and the Israeli intelligence services? Is it not documented? Is there not an FBI document saying that Epstein was trained in espionage by Ehud Barak? Not a statement of fact? Yeah. So who knows what he passed to them? All right. Opening Doors 1 says, I once had a pint of Guinness and followed through. Oh, just a statement. That's funny. I don't like stout myself. I think someone the other day asked if I drink ale. No. I don't really hardly drink any beer of any description. Every now and again, I might have a lager. Every now and again. And I don't get drunk on lager. It's a really hot day, you're sitting in a beer garden, it's a really hot day, you've got an ice cold, nice lager, not like Foster's, a nice lager, an ice cold one, on a really hot day, just one, lovely. Getting drunk on ale, or stout, no, Guinness, no thanks. If someone bought me one, I'd drink it. I'm in a pub and someone just hands me a Guinness, I'd be like, all right. It's not that gross. But I'm not buying Guinness. Mild laxative as well, isn't it? According to Opening Doors 1. Okay, GC75 says, they say, does Bo polish his head? No, I don't. I don't polish my head. I do like to keep nice and clean, though. So, get like an actual bowling ball polisher and just put my head in there like Homer. Thanks for the money, though. LJMV says, the people saying they are gay to get asylum should be forced to kiss three men in front of the immigration officers for up to 2 minutes. And then you put like an emoji face that's puking. Yeah. See, the people at the Home Office or whoever who make the decision, they don't care if it's true, do they? They really don't care. It's like, you've said the right thing. I can just tick the box and let you into the open population to commit whatever crime. We don't know your background. We're not interested in actually vetting it in any way. You've just said the right thing for us to tick the box. That's all it is. That's all that's going on. LJMV says, then send them back. Again, I don't know what that's exactly in relation to, but the sentiment, of course, couldn't agree more with. Yeah, millions must go. Azzy0161 says, here's 40 shillings on the drum for those who volunteer to come to list and fight the foe today. When over the hills and far away. I'm doing my best Hagman there. That's what you've written. That's just what you've written. Thank you for putting that. If anyone doesn't know what the hell that was, there's an old, really old, late 18th century, early 19th century British military marching song. That, Over the Hills and Far Away. It was also the theme to Sharp. Sung by one of Sharp's men, Hagman. I was doing Over the Hills and Far Away by Hagman there. I think I sung a tiny one line of it just the other day, didn't I? Anyway, I love Sharp. I'm on record as loving Sharp on History Bro. I've got a fair bit of content about some of the earliest Sharp novels. I mean to do more at some point. Love Sharp, me. Love it. In fact, me and Luca will probably be doing, for LotusEaters.com, probably do Sharp content at some point. We've talked about it a fair bit. Sean Bean. Was it very early 90s? The TV shows. Bernard Cornwell novels. Over 20 novels. Great stuff. Okay, thanks, Azzy. You're obviously a massive fan of Sharp. As am I. Good stuff. Great stuff. All right. Erwin Romulus says, speaking with Bill May here, Sharon, I guess that's Sharon Osborne, said it's much better in Windsor now that all the tea shops are gone and it's full of foreign cafes. She doesn't even appreciate tea. Yeah, Sharon Osborne's going to be barely a Civnat, isn't she? She's a subversive person. She's actually a disgusting human being. Really, really horrible, mean-spirited, nasty human being. She's sitting down with Bill Maher, who says it's great that London's demographically ruined. Makes sense, doesn't it? Classic fodder for a Tommy rally, to be perfectly honest. All right. Matthew C83 says, I see your flat earth and raise you space is fake. Matthew, and I met you at the weekend, didn't I? It's nice to meet you, sir. The flat earthers. They often go hand in hand, don't they? You'll often find that people that think that space is fake and gay are also flat earthers and science deniers in all sorts of ways. Yeah. Got to step over them, really. Absurd thing, this day and age. In my opinion. All right, that's the show. It's now 18 minutes past 9 in the AM British summertime on Friday, the 17th of April in the year of our Lord 2026. Thank you for joining me. You've been the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Without you, it isn't a thing. I hope you have a great weekend. I really do. Try and make the best of it. If you can. If you've got any free time, try and do something. Try and do something constructive and valuable with your time. I know it's not always possible. It really isn't. You've got commitments and kids and all sorts of stuff. But if you can, try and make it count. You'll never get it back. You'll never get the time back again. It's the most valuable thing you've got. Okay. Until Monday morning then. Take care.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.